I have the privilege of introducing our preacher today, Nate Burris, and he's one of us. He has grown here as well, and his heart and love for God has grown equally. And he and his wife are going to be going to Indonesia, and I'm sure you saw the table out front. And one of the most densely populated Muslim countries in the world, if I understand correctly. So you're going into the heat of battle, and it's just wonderful to have you here. I've loved watching you work with the youth here at ABF, and it's great to see you going out. We will be praying for you and missing you and looking forward to your reports. But let me introduce to you Nate Burris. Nate, come on up.
Good morning. All right. I'm so glad to share with you guys. Thanks for having me. You may have noticed I titled the message today, Back to the Beginning. What I'm talking about there, what I want to do is sometimes we need a reminder in life of how big God is, of how great he is. To do that, sometimes we need to go back to the beginning of his story in creation. And that's where I'm going with this. What do we learn about God in creation? We learn that he's all-knowing. He put it all together, right? So he knows how it all works. So he knows everything. We learn that he's all-powerful. He has the power to put the mountains in their place and put the waters exactly where they should be on the earth. He's all-powerful. He's perfect, holy, and righteous. Everything that he created was perfect, right? There wasn't a flaw. He wasn't careless at all in that. He's a God of law and order. He put it all together, working the stars, the planets, you know, rotating around, the moon moving, the tides and everything, the plants and trees producing after their own kind. He had an order and exactness to it all. We learn that he's self-sustaining and eternal. He was there before it all existed. He's always been there. He doesn't need us. He doesn't need any of his creation. He put it all together. And we learn that he's relational. He made us, man, in his image. He made us to have a relationship with him. Not that he needed us, but that he wanted to love on us and have a relationship with us. That's our God. That's our God that we learn about in the first story of the Bible. He's amazing. Sometimes we get sidetracked, get caught up in life, and just get focused on what's right in front of us, what the next task is. We don't really think about how big God is sometimes. We're just mere creations created by the Creator. We need to be brought down and humbled at the thought of that, that we're so insignificant. We're tiny little specks on a planet in a big universe that God made. We don't deserve his love, but he loves us. That's where we need to be. We need to be broken down and brought to humility before God to give our hearts to him, right? That's what God's after. He's after our hearts. Deuteronomy 6:4 says, love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your mind, and all your soul. That's what he's after. Did you guys see in the bulletin today about Jimmy and Aaron Douglas? That's so cool. Like, the people that they're working with are coming around to understanding what Jesus is after in their worship. Read this little phrase to you. So the Honorable Jesus says, we need to worship from our hearts. That's where they're coming around to. That's where they're finally understanding. Before it was an external atmosphere, an external expression of loving God. But now they're understanding they need to love him from their hearts. So today's not about me. It's not about you. It's all about God. That's where I want us to come away with, our view of God, and just be wowed by him, brought to fear by him. I want to share with you my testimony
and how God's been working in my life and how God brought me to this point of where we're at now, that we want to go be missionaries to Indonesia, to unreached people groups. I was born here in Southern California, lived in the valley most of my life. My parents raised me up. My parents were believers. I had a loving Christian home. They taught me right. They taught me the Bible. And it was great. Everything was great. Until I turned 14. I turned 14 and my dad died. My dad had a heart attack, massive heart attack. And my life was shattered at that point. My invincible dad, the one I looked up to, was taken away just like that. It was a shock to us all. He was 43 years old, in great shape, competed in triathlons regularly, Ironman distance triathlons. And he had a massive heart attack, took us all by surprise. Through that, I was told that God has a plan for everything and he works all things for good. And I don't think I quite understood what that meant at that time. I was looking for some good to come out of that according to my agenda, according to what I thought was good. I was kind of waiting on God to counteract the bad that happened in my life. I was looking for some good to come out of what happened. I didn't have a very clear picture. Then I faced a series of hardships after that. My mom remarried, which was a good thing, but that first stepdad died of cancer only 2 years down the road, nearly 2 years into the marriage, and he was taken away from, you know, with cancer, and that was tough. Through that, my younger brother, 2 years younger than me, he was going through a stage of rebellion, and he was struggling with all the bad that was happening, and he wanted to make some fun out of it. He wanted to go his own way. And so he was getting in a lot of trouble. He got into drugs, was drinking, and he's only, you know, 12 years old at this time. Or no, I'm sorry, he's 13, 14 years old at this time. Running away, stealing, getting in gangs and stuff. It got really out of control, and my mom was trying to bring some discipline into his life, and it wasn't working, everything she was doing. So she found a Christian boarding school, a good school to send him to, in Missouri, and he was sent away out there. And it seemed to be turning around like it was good, but he ran with the wrong crowd out there as well and committed some crimes and got himself landed in prison for life. My brother in prison for life at 16 years old. And I'm like, where is the good coming out of all this, right? Where's the good? My grandparents died, one after the other. I was on this chase to like find the good come out of this. I was told God works everything for good. I was on this chase. My mom remarried again when I was 19, and I have a great stepdad now. He loves the Lord, and to this day, you know, he's the most awesome guy ever. However, he lived in another state, in Iowa. So my mom and my youngest brother moved out to Iowa, and I stayed here. I wanted to pursue some career opportunities and was going to college. You know, I was so frustrated with trying to find good to come out of all this that I was withdrawing away from church. I didn't want to hear what the Bible had to say anymore. Kind of felt like that was a dead-end road, and there's no good in my life. Everything just keeps getting worse. A lot of times we hear the testimonies where people get saved and you know, God relieves them of their drug issue or, you know, some kind of pain in their life, and God relieves them of that. And, you know, less often heard is the testimony where hardships increase. And like Paul, for instance, you know, when he was a believer, started preaching God, you know, everywhere he went, he was beaten and thrown in jail. Hardships increased on him. Bad things kept happening to him. And I don't say this to discredit those testimonies where people come out of a drug addiction. I mean, that's a beautiful thing. But I think we would all agree that the beautiful thing is being rescued in our eternal lives, right? A life with God forever. I mean, the amazing thing that comes out of that. But I had this incorrect view of God, so I was withdrawing away from God. And then another shocking incident happened. My youngest brother, who is in Iowa now, he was on a youth group trip, and they were doing this rappelling exercise down the side of a mountain, and he had an accident where his rope got cut, and he fell 120 feet. Crushed a C4, spent 6 weeks in ICU, 6 months in rehab, and he's paralyzed from the neck down now. He's in a wheelchair for the rest of his life. This was the last straw for me. I couldn't believe what was going on. This, you know, bad after bad after bad. I couldn't understand, where is God in this? Where's the good coming out of this? I was beginning to think, does God even exist? How could a loving God allow so much pain to happen in one person's life? So I was severely questioning God's good plan. And I was brought to a point of, does God even exist? Some people might have a different testimony. You might relate to this in your own hardships. Seeking after, you know, what God's got planned for your life and wondering, how could God incur so much pain? Why is there so much pain in this world? And you might relate to this in your own hardships. I was exploring if God didn't exist, though. Some people might get mad at God, you know, for the pain that happens in their life, but my situation was different. How can you get mad at somebody if they don't even exist, all right? So that's kind of where I was going. And I was exploring this whole evolution side, because after all, I grew up in a Christian home. I went to a private school, and I didn't learn much about evolution and all the scientific stuff. When I got to public school later, that was all implied in the people's thinkings and my friends' thinking that evolution was true. And so I started exploring it more, thinking maybe there is something to this. Maybe we're here for nothing. Maybe this is all just random chance. And I had this atheist friend in my life at this time. And he was a good friend. We had a lot in common, a lot of, you know, outdoor activities and stuff that we like to do the same and everything. But whenever it came to the subject of God, he used to pepper me with his scientific knowledge and just break me down. Like I was seen as so naive in his mind. And I felt naive because I didn't have any answers to what he was saying. Everything he said started making sense to me, and I was like, man, I should check out this evolution thing. So I was reading some books. He was suggesting books for me to read, and I was checking them out. But then I wanted to see the other viewpoint, too, of what I've been growing up with. And so I started reading books by Christian authors as well. A really good book that gave me a lot of insight was by Ralph Mountcaster, is his name, and it's called Examining the Evidence. It was a great book. Some other ones, Josh McDowell, New Evidence That Demands a Verdict. Some books by Henry Morris, and great stuff. Well, in this, I was seeing holes in the theory of evolution. I was seeing things that didn't line up, didn't quite make sense. But the idea of there being an intelligent designer behind this world totally made sense. Science backed it up every time. And so that really brought me around. And I began to see God in his creation exists. And no doubt, without a doubt in my mind, he has to be behind all of this. All this law and order, everything, you know, that we see around us, there's no doubt there has to be a creator behind all this. So this sent me on, you know, a chase. Okay. If this is, you know, the creator of the world, I need to check this out. I want to know my creator. As a creation created by a creator, I want to know him. The lights came on. Not only was I finding out that God exists, I was also finding out that the God who exists is the God of the Bible. It all made sense to me. All the stories I grew up with, you know, just clicked and turned on right then and there. God started by making this world perfect. And then man sinned and broke that. And pain is incurred on us because of sin. We have death, diseases, deformities, pain, hurt, hatred, and sorrow. We have selfish pridefulness. All this is because of sin in this world. And that's where we're at now. So I began to understand all the bad that happened in my life was because of sin in this world, maybe directly and indirectly. All of this started to teach me how to respond to God. I began to see that God is way bigger than my little life. He has a plan for all of eternity. And so when God says everything happens according to his good plan, he's talking about this plan, not my little life. You see? And so God became so much bigger than me, so much bigger in my thinking. I think of Job when he was going through his situations. Time after time, he was, you know, incurred with all these bad things happening because Satan was testing him, right? Trying to get him to reject God. And even Job's three friends were telling him, you know, it's because of sin in your life, you're not righteous and everything. And Job finally broke down and he was like, why would God have all this happen to him? You know, he finally broke down and was like, how could a loving God do all this? And what was he answered with? We see in Job 1, then the Lord spoke to Job out of the storm. He said, who is this that obscures my plans with words without knowledge? Brace yourself like a man. I will question you, and you shall answer me. Some pretty stern words, right? Some pretty stern words. God was about to slap him in the face with a dose of reality. You know? Here's what he said. Where were you when I laid the earth's foundation? Tell me if you understand who marked off its dimensions. Surely you know, sarcastically, right? Who stretched a measuring line across it? On what were its footings set? Or who laid its cornerstone? While the morning stars sang together and all the angels shouted for joy. Wow. Who was Job to question God? Right? Man. After this, I mean, this is just the beginning of the next few chapters that lay out how awesome God is, how great he is, that he put everything in his place, that he created this world. He owns this world. We have no rights at all before God. So God brought me back. I had a change of heart. I had a change of heart, and I wanted to know my Creator. I like to joke around that God used an atheist to bring me back to him. Pretty awesome, right? But it's more than that, though. It's more than that. It's God brought me back to him and his creation. He brought me back to the beginning. Back to the beginning of understanding who he is. And wowed me. Brought a sense of fear and reverence into my life before him. I exult with joy now when I think about him. Psalm 33 is an awesome picture of how I'm viewing God now, if you want to go there with me. In the beginning of Psalm 33, he starts off by singing joy and praise, and he has this high desire for God to be praised, and that his people are, it's fitting for his people to praise him, and how righteous and true God is. And then he starts in verse 6 by recognizing the Lord in everything that was made. He says, by the word of the Lord, the heavens were made, their starry hosts, by the breath of his mouth. He gathered the waters of the sea into jars. He put the deep into storehouses. Let all the earth fear the Lord. Let all the people of the world revere him. For he spoke and it came to be. He commanded and it stood firm. Man. Who does this? God, by his very words, spoke everything into existence. That's how big he is. That's how powerful he is. You know, my wife and I went to the Creation Museum in Indiana, I think it is. It's in that tri-state region right around in there. Put on by Ken Ham in Answers in Genesis. That's another awesome resource if you guys want to check him out, Ken Ham. But in this Creation Museum, they had this planetarium, one of those awesome things where you sit back and put your head back on the chair and look up at the dome screen, and it goes through all the stars in creation and shows where our planet is and our solar system and all that rotating around, and then it zooms out and shows where our solar system is in this huge galaxy, the Milky Way galaxy. Then it zooms out even bigger than that and shows all the neighboring galaxies everywhere. I mean, it's amazing. It just blows your mind how big the universe is. And God is bigger than that. God is bigger than that. Psalm 33 continues with this in verse 10. The Lord foils the plans of the nations. He thwarts the purposes of the peoples. Man. Our plans are nothing to him. He laughs at them, right? But his plans, verse 11, the plans of the Lord stand firm forever, the purposes of his heart through all generations. Wow, I am so thankful that his plan never wavers. I mean, his plan to bring us to salvation, to bring us to back to him, into relationship with him, is so undeserving. We do not deserve that at all. And yet he does that. His plan does not waver at all. It's firm. He stands by his word. Oh, I'm so satisfied with that. I'm satisfied with being under a big God like that. In verse 12, blessed is the nation whose God is the Lord, the people he chose for his inheritance. Obviously, in the Old Testament here in Psalm, I'm talking about the nation of Israel. And God lived among them. They were the world was known through the nation of Israel, because they were his chosen people. And now today, Jesus Christ has brought us into that relationship with him as well. We're grafted into his people now. So awesome. From heaven, verse 13, from heaven the Lord looks down and sees all mankind. From his dwelling place he watches all who live on earth. He who forms the hearts of all, who considers everything they do. Man, we are never to bring God down to our playing level. We're not supposed to see eye to eye with God. He looks down on us, right? That's how big he is. We need to remember that. I think when we get caught up and we start thinking about our, you know, daily struggles and everything, we're like, why God this, why God that? Listen, God is not supposed to come down and reason with us about his plan. He's not supposed to explain himself before us. We're supposed to be wowed by him and trust him all the time. Don't bring him down to our level. And the Psalm 33 ends with talking about hope. And there is no hope in ourselves. We are useless and helpless ourselves. And our hope, our only hope, is in him. And we wait in that hope with expectancy. Yeah, we wait on him. He's the one that we can stand in. He's the one that we can trust in. All our hope is in him. So, see, by God taking me back to the beginning, he brought me into this correct view of God. All of a sudden, my hardships, my trials, they didn't mean anything. They're insignificant little struggles that I've been through. That's how I'm seeing it now. And I was broken and brought down to humility before God. This is so not like America. This is not what we're, you know, our nation encourages. We encourage this self-made image, you know, to be proud of yourself. And to make yourself known in this world, to make something of yourself, right? No, instead, we need to have a heart of brokenness, a heart of humility, and realize that we are so little before God. Jim Liljergen, I met with Jim Liljergen this week, and he gave me this awesome bookmark. And I've heard this before, but I haven't been able to look through it myself. You might want to write this down. It's by Nancy Leigh DeMoss. Nancy Leigh, L-E-I-G-H, Demoss, D-E-M-O-S-S. And it's called The Brokenness Bookmark. And it contrasts between a proud people and a people who are broken before God. I'm just going to share a couple of them with you because it's pretty long. But proud people desire to be served. Broken people are motivated to serve others. Proud people are independent, have an independent, self-sufficient spirit. Broken people have a dependent spirit, recognize their needs for others. Proud people have a subconscious feeling, this ministry, church, is privileged to have me and my gifts. Think of what they can do for God. A broken people have a heart attitude is, I don't deserve to have a part of in any ministry. Know that they have nothing to offer God except the life of Jesus flowing through their broken lives. Yeah, this is a good reminder of who we are before God. A good reminder that we need to have a broken and humble spirit. So, in all this, though, my view of God radically changed, and I had this desire to share that with everybody in my life. I didn't want to just sit on this treasure of knowledge. I wanted to do something with that. I wanted to share that with everybody. I wanted everybody else to be thinking about God the way I've been thinking about him now. I started going to Bible studies. Also, you know, kind of in that transition period where I was, you know, questioning God, I started attending a Bible study with ABF at John DeLuca's house. Some of you guys might remember John DeLuca from a while back. And he gave me a lot of great insight, suggested some of those books for me to read. I started getting involved with ABF more. I wanted to help out with youth, and I was doing that. And I wanted to go on missions trips. I've been on a lot of missions trips now to Mexico with Rebecca Green and a lot of the youth here at ABF. Also through an organization called Amor Ministries, who was helping out there. And Cornerstone as well, started doing some Mexico mission trips. One of those trips, though, we went to a city, Ensenada, just south of Ensenada, and we were helping with an orphanage down there. And we brought a ton of clothes down for them, and they looked at the clothes, and they're like, wow, we already have so much. We don't need these. Why don't you take them down to the neighboring village just down the road there? They have a need. They really need some clothes. So we did that. We brought them to them. And we found out that this people in this little village were not speaking Spanish. They were speaking some other dialect, derivative from the Aztec language. And so our translators couldn't communicate with them. We didn't really know where they're at. So I was asking in my group, how are these people going to hear about the gospel? Or have they heard about the gospel? And everyone in my group didn't have answers. People at the orphanage didn't have answers. We didn't know. But one person in my group told me about this organization called New Tribes. And New Tribes specifically goes into these unreached people groups, learns their language, and brings the gospel to them in their language. So I thought, awesome, cool. There's an organization out there doing that. But that's not for me. Started thinking, okay, that's good over there. But God had planted a bug in me. God planted a bug in me, and I couldn't rest on it. It kept coming back. We had a missionary here that we supported, Melissa Sparrow, and she was with New Tribes, and she worked in Papua New Guinea, and she came and spoke to the kids a couple times, spoke up here, and I got the chance to go out to lunch with her a couple times, and she gave me a lot of details and everything in the ministry. I started really getting excited about this and thinking, man, maybe God might want me to do this. Maybe we can, you know, go forward with this. And so I was kind of left with an unsettling feeling in where my life was, and I felt this call to go out to unreached people. People who not only don't hear about the gospel, but they don't have an access to it. They don't even have access to it in their language. Joshua Project tells us that there's about 14,000 people groups in the world, 6,000 of them unreached. And these are rounded numbers. Some people, you know, organize people groups according to different standards, language being the most of them. SIL and Wycliffe recognize language groups instead of people groups. They find over 6,500 language groups, 2,500 of them still unreached. No access to the gospel in their language. Yeah, my view of God was like so, stirring up in me a need to get the gospel to these people. And I started talking with people here in ABF about this need. Dave Huners, Jim Lilligan, awesome mentors, you know, encouraging me in this. Andy Garcia also. And one day Andy told me, he said, why don't you just take a little baby step forward? You know, just take a baby step forward and see where God leads you. And so I did that. I started taking a class over at Eternity Bible College in Simi Valley. Before I knew it, I was all in. God just, yeah. I took that little baby step, and God was like, this is the direction you're going. He just gave me a push. And I was right into taking, you know, full classes at Eternity Bible College. New Tribes requires that you have 2 years of Bible college before you go into their training. So that was great. I was growing in the Word over there. God was, you know, wowing me by Him every day. Growing in the Word here. John Nungester took me in as his intern. That's also part of the program at Eternity Bible College. You got to be an intern at your local church. So John took me in, and I was, you know, growing in the Word, teaching the kids too. And it was a great experience. And then I moved on to New Tribes and went to school out there. But where are you at with this? How does your view of God push you to want to go share that with everybody? You know? Are you going to sit on this little treasure of knowledge you have? Are you just going to, you know, God saved me. He saved my personal life. That's cool. I have a good relationship with Him now. I'm just going to sit on that. Is that how you feel about it? Or is God so big and God wowed you so much that you got to emulate, you got to reflect His image to everyone around you, and you got to share that with everybody? Think about, like, I use this analogy sometimes. Imagine a school bus out there in the parking lot, and there's a bomb under the school bus, and it's filled with children, and you know about this bomb. Are you going to sit here and wait for that bomb to go off? No, the power of the destruction of that bomb is going to strike so much fear into you that you got to run out there and get those kids off that bus, tell the driver about that, and save them, right? How much bigger is the power of God than a bomb? How much bigger is the power of God than an atom bomb? You know what I'm saying? That's the kind of fear we should have. And I'm not saying we should run out into the streets panicking, saying, the Lord's going to return, everybody repent and be saved. You know, but what I am trying to communicate is this urgency of how big God is, and we need to let people know about that. And we need to do it according to His way, too. Building relationships, discipleship, right? And sharing with people in our lives about God. Matthew 28 calls us to be disciples. Then Jesus came to them and said, all authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. Therefore, go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit. We've heard this verse before. This is what we're called to do. We're called to go make disciples. I'm not telling you anything new. And I'm sure you've all heard before, you don't have to be a missionary going overseas to make disciples, right? We need to make disciples of people in our lives, people in our neighbors, people at work. All of us are missionaries. Not the ones who go overseas. All of us are missionaries. And you've all heard this before. I've been given a great opportunity in my apartment complex with my neighbor, Trey. Not a believer. We've connected, and we're building that relationship. Been able to share about God with him a few times now. And it's exciting. So, yeah, when I finished at Eternity Bible College, I entered the training over at Missouri. And at that training school, they teach you some specialized skills for acquiring language and culture in another country, in another region. And some of those classes focus on worldview, understanding people's worldview, where they're coming from, what they're thinking. We had language classes, learning how to transcribe what we're hearing in phonetics, and then be able to analyze that data and develop a written form for their language. Because most of these languages that we're going to, they're only orally spoken. They're not written. They've never been translated before, too. So some of these classes specialize in that. We also specialize in some missionary technology work, like batteries, solar panels, how to build your house, water filtration system stuff. A lot of classes on health and wellness, too. I mean, in tropical areas, you've got a lot of diseases to worry about, malaria and such. We also had a mock-up tribal setting to kind of put us through the ringer, too. This was awesome. In this class, our teachers who have been out there, had field experience, been out there for 20 years or so, they dress up in makeup and wigs and everything and set up a little tribal scenario. And we have to go in there and try to communicate with them, try to understand them for the first time. And we made a lot of mistakes going into that, you know, offended them in ways that we shouldn't have. And so it was really a great experience to kind of give us a preparation for what we're getting ourselves into. Out there at that school is also where I met my beautiful wife, Abby. She had a heart for missions as well. She was born in Indonesia to missionaries in Indonesia, and they returned here, and she grew up in Michigan, and she went to Bible school at New Tribes Bible Institute, and there she really grew in her relationship with God. She felt this urge to go to unreached people groups, and so she came to the training center as well. So here we are. We're all learned up, ready to go, right? No, we still got a long road ahead of us. We still got a lot of learning to do. We'll start by going there to Indonesia. We're going to go to a city called Salatiga. In that city is a language school where we'll be able to learn the national language. This will be a lot easier than learning a tribal language because it has been translated. We'll have teachers. And also a big part of that will be learning the Indonesian culture as well. I'm told that where we're going, there's a community of believers that we can go to church with, that we can learn from, and help prepare us to the next phase of what we're doing. The next phase will be to move into a tribe. During our language school learning, we will be taking trips out, surveying where would be an appropriate place for God to have us go do ministry. When we move into that tribe, learning their language is going to be a whole lot different. It usually takes, on average, about 5 years to learn a language never been translated before. But this is more than just learning language. You know, this is a common misconception about missionaries. You just learn their language, translate the message, and give it to them. Well, there's more than that. We need to understand ways that they perceive the world around them. We need to understand ways that they think. We need to understand how they express ideas, how they communicate truth to each other, ways that they act, how do they channel messages, how do they make decisions. All of these come into play. We need to understand their culture. We need to just put off everything that we know before and step in as learners and learn from them first so that we can clearly communicate the message to them. Some of you might be thinking, man, this is going to take so long. Why not just teach them Indonesian? Wouldn't that be faster? Or maybe teach them English even? Here's the thing. We need to put the message in a way that is relevant to them to understand. And New Tribes has had a lot of experience with this in the past. New Tribes is an organization that's been around since 1942. And so there's been a lot of mistakes made along the road and a lot of things to learn from them. I want to tell you a story about the Samandang people. The Samandang people in Indonesia, missionaries came to them in the early 70s, and the Samandang people were ready for change. They were all, God had prepared them already to hear the message. They were living in dark fear of the spirits around them. That's another thing I should tell you real quick. When we go to Indonesia, it is 85% Muslim of the population, for sure. The populated regions, though, are further west in the country. Let's bring up the map, actually, here. I'm going to show you. Here's the world. Here's where Indonesia is in this corner here. 1,700 islands make up all the Indonesia there. More than that, actually. But, okay, here on the west side, you have the island of Sumatra and Java. These two are very heavily populated regions and mostly Muslim. This is a more dangerous area to go to if you're going to be a Christian missionary. We'd have to go under not a religious work visa, but some other source, some other means. But the further east you go in Indonesia, the further there's more less dense populations and lots more languages, lots more people groups. There's a total of 722 languages, live languages used in Indonesia today. That's the second most languages for one country, Papua New Guinea, which is the other half, actually. You see this side here, that line right there divides this island in half. There's a whole other side of this island here, and that's Papua New Guinea and some surrounding islands. There's over 850 languages in that country, and hundreds of them without the gospel. So the further east you go, the more of these indigenous groups you'll find. Indonesia is a country that's freedom of religion, although they want to keep the peace. And so, you know, they're not going to give you a religious visa to go into a Muslim area. But these people groups further east, they believe in what's called animism. And it's this dark fear of pleasing the spirits around them for everyday life. It's a belief in ancestor spirits around them, animal spirits around them, much like the Native American Indians had before we settled America. This is the environment they're living in. So the Samandang people were growing up in this, so they were ready for change. They were also pressured by the government to have a religion that believes in one God. They were also viewed Americans as their allies from World War II and stuff. They see the Americans as people who are friends because they relieved them from the Japanese. And they were ready. The missionaries started learning the language, and they had language consultants come in and check up on them. Well, one time, these language consultants kind of let the cat out of the bag for the people. They told them, these missionaries have an important message for you in your language, and that message is from God. Well, they got really interested, and they were like, wow, we want to know this message. We want to know it now. You can teach us in Indonesian, because they know a little bit of Indonesian. So the missionaries were pressured to teach them in Indonesian, so they did so. What that led to, though, was a confusion in the message because they didn't quite understand. And they had all these actions and all these marks of a true revival. They started leaving their old ways, getting rid of their idol worship. They were saying, you know, we've left our old ways, we're following God now. But if you think about it, I mean, is that all that's required in to be saved by God? I mean, is that our actions of just putting off the old ways is going to save us? No, because that would be a message of salvation through works, right? And so this is what they were learning. This is what they were concluding in the message as they were being taught in a language that wasn't used by them every day. So the missionaries, you know, were recognizing this hole in their testimonies, and they were thinking, you know, wow, let's get to the bottom of what they really believe. So they were questioning them. And they were questioning them to prove their salvation, really. I mean, they wanted to find out that they were believing the truth in the Bible. And so they asked them, who is God? And they said, he created everything. And they said, okay, how long has he been around? I don't know, they said. Okay, so not an eternal God in their mind. Who made God? I don't know who made him, was their answer. They asked, who is Jesus? They said, God's son, okay. They said, how long has he been around? Ever since God made him. No, the Bible tells us that Jesus was there before. And so these missionaries kept going with their questioning. They said, and they were finding holes in their testimonies and stuff. And so the missionaries, you know, were unsettled, and they were like, where do we go? They really didn't know where to go at this point. So they got together, they prayed, and they decided, okay, we need to go back to the beginning. We need to go back to the beginning and teach them who God is in creation and in their own language too, in a way that was clear to them. And here's some of their responses after they taught them like this. They said, I never knew God was perfect, holy, and righteous. God never did anything wrong. I never knew that before. That was in their minds. And keep in mind, these are the leaders, the Bible teachers now. You know, the missionary work has been there for a while, and they're encouraging them to go out and teach. So these are the Bible teachers responding. I never knew that God was eternal, that he lived forever. We didn't realize that in the beginning, God created man perfect and sinless, and then man turned away and fell into sin and rejected God. They didn't understand that. See, they kind of recognized a communal aspect of sin, but they didn't recognize their personal sin before God. We didn't know that every man of his own will has chosen to disobey and go against God. Now we understand why Jesus had to come and die on the cross. So from there, the missionaries and the Samandong Bible teachers went out, and now they're ministering to over 2,000 believers now. And they're going to regions over the hills, places that missionaries have never been before. It's pretty cool. But that was what they needed. They needed to go back to the beginning and understand who God was and build a solid foundation and build up in them a realization that they need a Savior. They needed to know why Jesus came, why we need Jesus. They needed to be put broken and brought humble, brought to a sense of helplessness before God. So all of this is to build a sense of fear before God and a need for a Savior. We need this too, don't we? We need to be brought back to the beginning and understanding who God is from time to time. We need to be humbled before him and realize how big he is. Man, we should never bring God down to our level and ask him to reason with us in our hardships and our trials. David did this too, right? He was known as a man after God's own heart, a man who trusted God all the way, and yet he got caught up in his daily life, and he got caught up with wanting to please himself and sinned with Bathsheba before God, and he had to be brought back to understanding who God is and brought back to humbleness and humility before God. He was broken for his sin before God. That's what we need to do. We need to remember who he is. He's the creator of everything. He owns everything. He set the sun, the earth, the moon, and the stars in their places. He makes them turn according to his will in a way that sustains life. He created the land, the sea, the skies, and all the creatures and plants that fill them. He created man in his image to have a relationship with him. He owns it all. We're just mere specks, little insignificant specks, unworthy of his love before him. Man, in that song, oh, how he loves us. Oh, how he loves us little insignificant creatures. And he loves us. We don't deserve that. I mean, just think about it. Take a breath. We don't deserve that breath right now. He owns the air that you just breathed in. Do you think of it that way? Does your view of God bring you a humble and refreshing view of him? I want you to watch this video now. There's a cool video about the Moi tribe in Papua, Indonesia. And let me give you a little preface before we watch this. You got to understand some of their worldview, that to some of these people, the garden is everything to them. Their garden holds spirits, They try to please spirits to bring up food in their garden, and so, a lot of times, even like the potatoes that they're growing have spirits that they're trying to please and stuff, and so their garden is like their world to them. So, just understand that going into this video, and see these people's testimonies. The gospel I've been giving them to them in late 90s. Now, you'll see their worldview change, and now they're taking the gospel out to other regions around them. It's pretty cool. So here, check this out. Wow, that's pretty cool. Yeah, did you see that look on their faces? I mean, they were speaking from their hearts. God got a hold of their hearts. I mean, that wasn't just some regurgitated words that they were speaking. They truly believed this message from God. They were wowed by God. They have a fear for God. So where's your view of God? Are you going to sit on it? Are you going to sit on this little treasure of knowledge that you have now? Are you so wowed by him that you got to go take it out to everybody? You know, remember this tree that we put up here? You think of the names on there. I mean, where are you at with this? These are children sitting on a school bus with a bomb under it. You know? That's how we need to think of it. We need to get the message of God out to these people. We need to get the message that they can be saved and brought back into a relationship with him. So, let's go to prayer to God. God, you are so amazing. You're an amazing, big, and powerful God. You're so much bigger than we can ever fathom. So much bigger than we can ever know in this life, in our puny little lives. And God, I just pray that you would grab our hearts and attention towards you, and that you would bring us humbled before you and feared by you. I pray that we would revere your name. And I pray for those people out there who don't know you yet, Lord. I pray that you would change their hearts, that you would grab a hold of them as well. I pray that you would use us as a church, as people who are in the family, in your family. pray that you would create this huge desire in us to go share you with everyone. That we wouldn't sit on our knowledge of you, but that we would want to share that with everybody around us, Lord. We love you so much. We love you so much, Lord. In your name we pray. Amen. Boop, boop.